represents the 12th District and running for re-election. Mike Steele, the incumbent, is here in our studios. Mike, it's nice to have you here.
Good afternoon, Michael. Thank you for having me.
It's a time of issues. What issues are facing the 12th District that have been top of mind for you that you cannot put to sleep, that are always there every day?
Well, first of all, I want to say that it's been an incredible opportunity to serve as the state representative for this district over the last 2 years.
You like the job.
I love the job, and I love the people even more, and it's been an incredible thing to travel around this very large district, as your intro just alluded to. This is one of the largest, if not the largest, legislative district in the state, just under 9,000 square miles. So I am in my mobile office a lot, visiting towns and folks. But, you know, issues vary as the counties vary. And one of the things that will continue to be legislative priorities for me, obviously, are economic development and job growth. I want to continue to see those opportunities expanded into rural counties like the ones I represent. I also want to focus this next legislative cycle on career and technical education opportunities for our students. As a member of the K-12 Education Committee, I think that's vital. I think we need to look for alternative routes to success for these students. And what does a successful education in Washington State look like? Of course, one of the big hot-button issues that I worked on even in the last legislative session and the one prior was workforce housing. A lot of folks call that affordable housing, but I'm working really hard to change that narrative because I want to focus on the areas of housing where we see a major gap, and that is, where do we put our teachers, our nurses, our young professionals? How do we recruit folks back to the area if they've graduated and gone off to other parts of the state, other parts of the country, if they can't afford to live here? And so that's a major issue that I've heard about all over the district, and not just the district, but statewide. And so we've got some exciting plans in the works as we speak to address some of those issues right here in the 12th Legislative District.
It's hard to legislate housing, but it's easier, I guess, to fix the education system and to some degree to offer an escape for those who want to get a better education or at least leave their area, the 12th, with a good education that will allow them to join the workforce anywhere they choose.
Correct. Yeah, and I think changing the narrative is a really important thing. You know, for so long we said the only recognition of success is a four-year degree from a university. And I think that kind of pigeonholes a lot of students who may excel in other things that we desperately need in our communities today. And those are the skills and the trades, hand skills and trades. You can make an incredible living in the 12th district if you're a great diesel mechanic, if you are a welder, if you are involved in the construction industry. We know you can make a living here and a great living wage. So how do we create opportunities for those kids? I'll tell you one of the most moving testimonies that I've ever been a part of in the state legislature was when a group of children came in to testify on the type of education system they were experiencing. And they were involved in a move that I'd like to see us advance in the state, and it's called competency-based education. So it's moving away from that factory-style model where kids are just in rows and rows of seats staring at a chalkboard. Instead, we're asking these kids to go out and get engaged in the community, seek internships, look for ways to maybe get involved in apprenticeships and come back to your class and tell your class what you learned through that experience and what kind of competencies you gained through that experience. And these kids for the first time said, we realized we're not stupid, which is just, you can imagine a room full of politicians going instantly silent when someone says something like that. How do we help these kids realize that they have real skills that are applicable in the real world and they may not do the greatest on a standardized test, but there are ways to be successful outside of the test scores. We absolutely have to have accountability. We have to absolutely have to be able to measure some sort of standard for success, but it can't be all or nothing.
And it's difficult to get good teachers, good doctors, good anything in some of the more rural areas, not just at the 12th district, but any district.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I will say through my time in the legislature, the one thing that I've really tried to bring back home as a message is it's very often not about partisan politics when we're debating policy in Olympia. It usually comes down to the urban-rural divide and how do we deliver services and meet the needs for the folks that live in rural communities like we do for the folks that live in urban communities.
And where does the money go? Well, first of all, where does it come from?
Exactly.
And then where does it go?
Exactly.
More difficult to work that way. Let's look at the problem that you talked about in housing. Right outside our studios here, the town of Wenatchee, with a less than 1% vacancy rate, has a housing problem.
They certainly
do. It's fascinating to know that when we drive all the way to your district and experience the problems of the 12th, number one on the list, again, is housing.
Mm-hmm.
How did this happen? How did we get painted into the corner?
Well, you know, there's a combination of factors, obviously, but the biggest driver that we see in this district is the fact that everybody loves it. So, you know, people are looking here to retire. They're looking here to relocate as a second home. You know, these are resort communities. When you look at the Met Howe, you look at Leavenworth, you look at Lake Chelan, you look at Wenatchee, these are being described as some of the best places in the country to retire. So folks that have been working all their lives and saving and maybe had a second home over here are now moving over here and selling those second homes and downsizing or doing reconstruction, and that's driving the cost of homes up. But it's not isolated to the 12th Legislative District. We're seeing it statewide, And part of that is because thousands and thousands and thousands of people are moving in here on a regular basis to work for Amazon, to work for Microsoft. Just saw a statistic yesterday about the congestion in downtown Seattle. Over 50,000 new people have moved in the last year, and it's just creating, again, more gridlock. But those folks are also driving up the cost of housing in the Puget Sound. And when you're living in the Puget Sound, suddenly a home that might be a median price of $450,000 here in the 12th District doesn't seem that expensive when you are trying to find a home in the Puget Sound for less than $800,000 or $1 million.
That's the standard. That's the entry. Mm-hmm. That's the entry fee.
Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, where is it coming from? It's coming from the San Francisco Bay Area, folks moving up who see the Puget Sound is cheaper than the Bay Area. So it's just all a ripple effect.
Los Angeles is cheaper than the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Paris is cheaper than the Bay Area, for
yes.
that matter. And Tokyo, too, I think is going to be on that list before it's done. Well, there's a price to be paid for success, and that is shortages of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Prices going up. Mm-hmm. And that inevitably happened in the 12th District and the Met Howe, wherever the case may be, because of the success that it sought, and then in some instances to the magic of the way things change and evolve. So is there going to be more farms in terms of cloud farming in the 12th in the future, or are more people going to be coming? Is it a destination area for the growth of the technological world we live in?
You know, I think we will continue to see growth. Using my crystal ball, both from my day job as the executive for the Lake Chelan Chamber of Commerce, and then my legislative hat, you know, I kind of get to see these things from all sides. There is definitely a continuation of growth I see on the horizon, but I think what that means is that we have to get innovative, and we have to partner. You know, I see this responsibility is not just one that can be solved locally, but we have to work with the developers, we have to work with the state, and we have to find ways that all of these parties involved can innovatively reduce pricing of housing. Now, units, one of the biggest problems, as you can imagine, supply and demand, as we don't have the supply of units here in Wenatchee or anywhere, for that matter, in the 12th Legislative District. If we can get, you know, some building occurring and get some units constructed, then that ultimately may drive down the cost of those units, provided we start to meet some of the need that is out there. I serve on the Capital Budget Committee at the state level, and one of the things that we're looking at is working with the Public Works Trust Fund Board and maybe finding ways to increase their opportunities to build out infrastructure around housing, not building houses themselves, but infrastructure associated with units, so that the developer would have less hard costs.
Sewer, water, lights.
Correct. Yep, and keep
That's
those
a big
costs
deal.
Lower.
So you can actually decide where the development goes instead of just working with a developer who puts it where he can afford to put it, or whatever land he can buy.
Correct.
Has this happened anywhere?
You know, this would be an innovative model, and I'm really excited about it because it's something I'm passionate about. I've had a great opportunity to sit down with the chair of the Capital Budget. He and I have a great relationship, and he's excited as well about the idea. I know several members on the Public Works Trust Fund Board, and they are excited about it. So I think we may make some progress. And the exciting thing about that is if you can remove some of the politics out of the policy, meaning if you don't have to go through the entire legislative process and you can create a fund opportunity that already exists inside the capital budget, that's a much easier lift than having to create legislation from the ground up and go through both chambers and ultimately the governor's desk before we see any relief.
Also, I'm just dreaming here, but I don't think many developers want to go down the rabbit hole in Olympia to get a job done, right?
That's correct. That's correct.
You know where you go in, but you don't know where you're going to come out.
That's right.
Well, in the furthest districts of the 12th, there are people probably looking for a little growth, a little renewed excitement to their economy, and maybe a few new faces in town.
Mm-hmm.
But in Chelan, I bet they're saying, wait a minute, we don't need another hotel. With the smoke we had last year, this one was plenty big.
No, you know, we've really been fortunate in my hometown. We have seen great growth. One of the things that's always been one of my mantras as I've helped in economic development is we need to have quality in growth, and we need to have control in growth. Managed growth is really what you seek to accomplish, because growth happens inevitably. You know, you're not going to be able to turn off the faucet if people want to continue to come. There's nothing you can do to dissuade folks from coming and living part of the dream that we all experience here in the 12th District. So how do you manage that growth effectively, and how do you set aside appropriate land access and those sorts of things? And that really comes down to planning effectively in our communities. You mentioned some of the farther reaches of the 12th District. One of the things that I think will also be a legislative priority and a big topic of discussion in this coming calendar year is broadband build-out.
Ah, yeah.
So the governor was here several weeks ago. We had a chance to sit down, and as I expressed to him, you know, you are sitting in the crown jewel of the 12th District as it relates to fiber and broadband here in Chelan County, but that is not the case in most of my rural parts of the 12th legislature.
Just a few miles away. It's,
correct.
It's not available.
That's right. So how do we get, because I really see, and it's, I think folks know, I also serve on the Technology and Economic Development Committee, where a lot of these energy policies, broadband discussions are happening in the House of Representatives. And one of the things I see with broadband, I see it as an essential service, essential piece now, much like your utilities. You know, that creates opportunity. When you have effective connection, and not just a connection, because if you look at the map, you know, of coverage across Washington State, it doesn't look too bad. But when you are talking about actual coverage speeds, you know, what's your upload and download time, that really matters. Because if you are sitting there waiting and waiting and waiting and you can't transfer a file or a document, is that an effective connection? And is it accomplishing your needs? No, it's not. So that's the other piece we're looking at, is how do we build out in these rural communities better access to broadband and connection?
That governor's conference about broadband included some people who were companies that were working only in the more rural areas.
Correct.
Have they been able to help you?
They have. You know, I mean, again, this is another one of those pieces where it's going to take a lot of partners to come to the table and say, okay, what do we need to do to effectively build this out? Because for most communities, you know, most communities are still struggling. Even in Chelan County, we're struggling with that last mile, that proverbial last mile. How do you build out? Because that's the most expensive, the farthest away, and how do you afford to do that? Every county, every place that has, you know, this conversation is dealing with that last mile build out. So that's a area of focus that we spent a lot of time on with the governor and the governor's office. There are no effective solutions, but we were very close last year. I don't know if folks recall or how closely they were watching activity in the last days of the legislative cycle, but we, and I was instrumental in helping propose this, we were beginning to create the Office of Broadband Build-Out. And this would be a new office at the state level that would be responsible for broadband build-out across this state. And we were committed to it. We were going to put $300 million into this broadband build-out initiative, but
politics, that's a lot of money.
It was a lot of money, and where that money was coming from was a big point of concern. And, you know, politics being what they were at the end of the day and at the final days of session, it just boiled down into something that didn't come to fruition. But I have every inclination that we will bring that discussion back as we head into the next session.
Perhaps people who are middle-aged can't appreciate the difference. What's the difference between broadband and just having a hookup?
Right.
But the students in the schools know the difference, and they also know that they're being choked out of the future that they deserve and that they're equal to and ready to take part in, because we just don't have them hooked up to the World Wide Web.
Right, and, you know, connection comes in a variety of ways. We're not necessarily talking about digging and running conduit. We are talking about maybe it's a wireless solution.
Mm-hmm.
And another area of conversation around that, of course, is small cell siting for poles and cities. And I was instrumental in trying to create policy across the state that would address how you site small cell towers, because that may be a solution for these very rural areas. If we can get effective coverage via the air, maybe that's the solution. So we're looking at all
those small
things.
Towers would cover everything in the town, for mm-hmm. instance, or would you need more than one for a town?
You'd probably need more than one. The distance is always improving as technology improves, but that's really what we're working with the business industry with, and the private and public sectors. How do they intersect? How does the local jurisdiction deal with that small cell siting? And how does the business that's trying to provide that service make sure that the pricing is appropriate and fair and, you know, it's accessible to every community? So those are some of the issues we're trying to tackle. Very, very complicated, as you can imagine. But
and the state has some responsibility. They say, well, if you had lived in Seattle, you wouldn't have this problem. But you don't live in Seattle. Do we owe you an explanation or at least a financial support to get you to join the rest of the human race?
Well, I think that's such a funny argument because, you know, you have only to point out Bertha.
Right.
And to say, you know, what portion of rural Washington is helping Bertha be built? A pretty substantial portion of rural Washington is supporting that transportation infrastructure.
Because you just take it off the top.
Yep.
Everybody gets taxed.
Exactly. So, you know, we're all in this together. And I think that's an important notion. And I think that's something that especially folks from the east side of the mountains are really good about working with the other side of the aisle on. Our side of the aisle as well, is how do we message the rural needs and how do we make sure that folks recognize we are contributing to the GDP of this state as well, and we are contributing substantially to the culture and the opportunities and the lifestyle of the state. So we deserve attention. And that's really, I think, one of the big roles of a legislator is to be an advocate. You know, advocate for your communities, advocate for your region, advocate for the needs so that you're not being left off the table.
And the way we've done this in the past is your broadband hookup may come by way of a public utility, but it's not a public utility. It's an add-on. It's something that you purchase. And it sounds like, well, that's an extra just for you. But in reality, it's either an entry card into the 21st century or the door is closed to the 21st century, and the result is just the same, regardless who pays for it.
Yep.
The public gets either shortchanged or gets to take part.
Yeah, and I really think this is going to be incremental. You know, I'm a big fan of incremental policy. You know, how do we do this effectively and accurately the first time? And it must be done well. So one of the things that I think we can focus on, and just to take small bites of the apple, if you will, is maybe we get better access for every city center. Maybe every library has better access. You know, maybe that's a step in the right direction. And then we start to build out those communities, those places where, you know, you're miles and miles away from civilization. Maybe there's a way we can address those in the future. And again, as technology, and I tell you what, there's some very exciting innovations in technology that we get to sort of see on the front side, in the Technology and Economic Development Committee that if they come to fruition are going to be game changers, not only for our state, but for the United States, and they're being developed right here in Washington. So,
well, I want to hear about that. I'll hear about it next. That's Mike Steele. He's the incumbent and also candidate for re-election in the state's 12th district. We'll be back right after this on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:40 in the afternoon. This is The Agenda. Every day, 12:15 to 1 o'clock, Michael Knight, your humble host. Today, my very special guest is Mike Steele. Mike is the incumbent and the candidate for re-election in the state's 12th district. He's kind enough to come in and talk about his campaign and what he has planned for those people who are willing to vote for him in the 12th district. You sit on an interesting committee in Olympia, the Technological and Economic Development Committee.
Yes, very, very interesting.
Did they choose you or did you choose them? I don't know how
I chose them, actually. You have to sort of apply, if you will, to a committee.
Not everybody can just come in and be part of the committee.
Right, right. But, of course, my background is focused on economic development, and I have an incredible fascination with technology. And to kind of merge the two fields and see how they interconnect, especially here in Washington State, where, of course, we are a tech-heavy state with Microsoft and Boeing and Amazon, all of these big, huge, you know, corporations as it relates to technology, we are seeing some incredible innovations come before that committee. And when you have innovation, when you have progress, you have to figure out how do you effectively make sure you're getting that out into the public in an effective way and in a safe way where your data is protected and your privacy is upheld. Those are big, big concerns in that committee. We want to make sure that the citizens in our districts and across the state have a true guarantee of privacy. And in fact, we're one of the few states.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. We are one of the few states in the country, though, that does have a chief privacy officer employed by the state to oversee data management, with respect to state agencies and universities.
And does the technological future of our state look promising? And what projects are there that you're excited about?
Yeah, it really does look promising, Michael. I'm excited specifically around the energy policies that we're working on, because as folks continue to innovate, we continue to solve efficiency issues with energy, emission issues with energy. We look for ways to better streamline congestion and traffic control with innovation and technology. So all of those things are going to contribute to a better future for Washington State, and I'm excited about that. I'm excited about the way in which we can deliver technology to our constituents across Washington State through innovation. Just before we took a break, we were starting to chat about ways in which Wi-Fi signals might be delivered to households. We're starting to see innovations around white noise on your television, delivering Wi-Fi signals to your home. So if that sort of thing comes to fruition.
So it's in the white noise?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Very incredible stuff.
Incredible indeed.
So that could be a game changer as far as access is concerned.
There's something else that has to, that is incumbent upon the people who lead the way in terms of the technological revolution. It changes society sometimes quickly.
Yes.
It changes economic structure of an area sometimes very quickly. We're seeing it in Seattle in terms of prices and the influx of people. But there's something that's more worrisome. San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle have a similar problem where great sections of the people who live there are just being left behind.
Mm.
They're living on the streets. Mm. They've lost their job. They've lost their home. They've lost their connection to a challenging economic situation that they can't fight, that they can't play in anymore. Now, I'm oversimplifying it, but the fact that San Francisco has all these gigantic, and that's my hometown, has these gigantic corporations from Google to anybody that you want to mention, and their number one problem is human excrement on the street,
yeah,
can show you that our society is being challenged in ways that we've never been challenged like this before.
Yes, and I think that's a very unique point and a good point. And that's one of the things, that is the way in which law and policy interact with technology and innovation. I think that's what we see. There are 17 of us that serve on that committee, and we see our roles in varying ways. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, the underlying factor, as we try to lay out policy to introduce this innovation and to help introduce it into the marketplace in an effective way and in a responsible way, as you mentioned, that's how we have to look at our policies in Olympia. We have to look at this from a point of view of, how quickly are we changing the society we're integrating this into? How quickly are we changing the economics of that community? Are there ways to more proactively approach those problems so that they don't just get, this technology just doesn't get introduced and then you're flooded with a series of unintended consequences?
Boy.
And that is something.
That's a phrase I don't like the sound of.
Right.
Unintended consequences.
Well, and that's one of the things that I've tried to educate folks on all over the state and all over the district. When you are legislating, one of the biggest things you have to look at in any policy you author is, what are those unintended consequences? And so I spend an exorbitant amount of time before I ever author a bill researching unintended consequences.
What can go wrong?
What could go wrong? What groups could be affected by this? And I bring those groups in and I say, okay, here's what I'm thinking about. You folks are boots on the ground. You're doing this every day. What's your feedback? How do you think this is going to work? And so you have to bring together public, private folks, people that are in corporate America and you know, just your average Joe trying to make a living in the place like the 12th District, how do these folks interconnect and how are they going to benefit one another? I always think that I've been sent to Olympia to improve the quality of life of my constituents. I never want to think that I would introduce legislation that would hurt or harm anyone in any way. So I really, again, take a lot of time and pride in the research I do to fully understand policy before it's ever implemented.
And there is a compact, it's unwritten, between corporations and the place where they call home and the people that run their corporations and their workforce to be good citizens. Now, we don't write it into the lease. We don't say, and you have to be a really good person, too.
Right.
But the generation of the kids that are the so-called millennials, I call them kids, they're not kids anymore, have this idea that it's important for a company or whatever the size does something humanistic, something supportive for their community. Whether it's helping in church bazaars, having food drives, yeah, doing something for the children that are behind in school. The fact is that those companies feel like they should do that, but
right,
they don't always have it written into their compact with the town.
Right.
It'd be nice if corporations were not twisted. We don't want to twist their arm, But we want to tell them that arms could be twisted, and here's the entrance fee. Come to Seattle. Come to Wenatchee. Build your corporation and have a wonderful time. But do something for us and promise to do it and make sure that you do.
Yeah, having a corporate conscience is important. And I think the way in which communities work together to recruit these companies also can play into how those folks operate ultimately when they arrive here. And I think that courtship is ongoing. You know, when you're trying to recruit a new business or a larger business or a different business altogether, you do have to do some due diligence and understand how they're going to fit in your community and what opportunities they're going to bring and what challenges are they going to bring, because you don't relocate entire companies without having a little bit of both. I mean,
sure,
change and growth are never easy. But if you can look at it again, going back to my earlier statement about how I approached my day job, you know, how do we plan effectively? How do we control growth effectively? How do we manage that growth? But that growth is going to happen. And I think we all have a responsibility as community members, myself included, to have that conversation and understand what we're getting ourselves into, what the benefits are, and potentially what the drawbacks are as we look to develop anything new.
And in rural areas, you don't always have growth to deal with because the growth is almost immeasurable. But there is change, and the change could be something that you don't want to see happen, too.
Yes. Well, that brings up a good point. I was appointed by the Speaker of the House to serve on a special task force. It's a bipartisan task force with 8 members of the entire legislature that are looking at the way in which we handle school construction, for instance, across this state. Because obviously those are huge costs in any community that wants to build a new school or refurbish an old school. And how do they come up with that money, especially since the state now has committed to the state swap and the state's paying the larger portion of the levy, and we've capped the levy dollars here locally at $1.50 per thousand. How do we continue to handle the bond side of it? How do we handle the construction side of it? So for places like Grand Coulee, for instance, that's a big concern where much of the private property is owned federally, or much of the property, rather, is owned federally. There's very little private property. And so the tax base is very, very small. So how do we deal with communities like that where they, too, deserve a new school or they, too, deserve, you know, good access to health care that are funded by these property taxes?
They're just on the wrong land.
Right. So their tax base is just too small. So that's something we're looking at as well when we talk about building out in these rural communities, because the 12th District is unique in a lot of ways because we have so much publicly held land. Only 87% of the entire land mass in the 12th Legislative District is publicly held. So there's, you know, it tells you just how small our tax base is.
That's the voice of Mike Steele. He's the incumbent and also candidate for re-election in the state's 12th District. We'll be back to talk with Mike Steele right after these words on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You bake it.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
12:52 at News Radio 560 KPQ. The show is called The Agenda. My very special guest is Mike Steele. He is the incumbent and the candidate for re-election in the state's 12th District. It's time now, Mr. Steele, for you to ask the great people of the 12th District for their vote.
Well, thank you, Michael. I just want to reiterate how much of an honor and a privilege it's been to serve in the House of Representatives, serving the people of my hometown, my home communities, the region in which I was born and raised. My family's been here for 5 generations, 115 years. I really care deeply about this place, and that's the only reason I go to Olympia. I go there to be your advocate, and I really hope that I have the opportunity to return there. I tell you, 2 years is not enough to get everything done that you have planned and the hopes you see and the visions you see for your district and the hopes that are conveyed by your constituents. So I hope for the opportunity and ask for the opportunity to go back. I would welcome the vote of support.
Did you ever see 2 years go by so quickly?
No, that's a great point, Ed. I think this is the fastest 2 years of my life, for sure.
No regrets?
No regrets. The joy in it has been the fact that we've helped a lot of folks. We've secured a lot of money for the districts, for towns and small communities that really, really needed it and are benefiting from it now. We've seen everything from community town hall construction to hospitals to road projects. And that, you know, and we've helped folks with dire needs as it relates to state agencies. And that is the reward. When you can help people in your home communities live better and be better and achieve the things they want to with just a little bit of help, that's why we do what we do at the legislature.
The midterm election is November 6th. It's not that far away, just a couple of weeks. When you think about it, it got here in a big hurry. And it's an important election. If you don't vote, I shall be very cross with you.
Please
vote. Mike Steele, incumbent and candidate for the re-election for the state's 12th district. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Michael.